we'd love to hear from you a little bit. What kind of questions or insights are going on for you? And we're going to just take some time with that. We'll kind of share what occurs to us before the lunch break. And as I said this morning, when we come back from lunch, we're going to really get into this whole dreams thing. But we really wanted to take the morning to kind of create this shared framework for the conversation we're going to have this afternoon. So just, Sarah, a microphone to Sarah, please.
Okay, I have a question. We all talk about problems or don't take anything seriously or don't try to be thinking about thinking. But my question is, what about our interests? Or what about when we want to find out something? Or what about when something really resonated on us and we do really like it, though? But we're not sure, is it okay to act on it, or is that okay? What about the unknown part of us? We don't know about, do anything about it. For example, when you see something and you really like it, you want to go to be a, for my situation, I'm in the middle of going to medical school, but I don't know, is it a good thing to do? Sometimes I'm just hesitated. So how would we apply the things to make sure we are in the right path?
Well, here's my take on that question, okay? It looks like you had a pipe dream, and then you use this wonderful gift you have to think about it. And then it became confusing. So I would say that you had a pipe dream. Something felt like you loved something, right? You liked it. Okay, that's coming to you from thought, right? Again, thought is neutral. It's giving you an experience. But this experience carried with it a good feeling. And like a dream for you or a liking, all right? Okay. So then you considered it. You used your power of thought to consider. Mm-hmm. And once you consider, you're going to put weight on the cork.
Oh, I see.
And you're going to get into pros and cons. That's the old thing we used to do with couples. When couples therapy first started, one of the techniques, it's probably still the technique. It's like, you get a couple, you know, and you say, okay, write your pros and cons about each other. Well, you know, huh? So then you're dealing with thought, manifested thought.
Right.
You get it?
Yeah.
So we're saying, okay, can we get you to have a little less cons and a lot more pros? You see?
Yeah.
Or you look at it and you say, oh, my God. This looked like my dream wife, but now that I see you in pros and cons, I don't know anymore if I should follow it. You see? I don't know if I should follow it. So you just want to be careful there that what happened is you had a pipe dream, and when you shared that dream, I could see how much you had a good feeling for it. And then you started to think, well, should I? Is it right for me? And that's thought too. That's another manifestation of thought. And it's giving you a different experience of your dream. It's maybe puzzling you?
Right.
Is it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So you just want to see that that's where the trouble lies.
Yes.
And here's the other piece. This is the piece. And I do this all the time, and I'm on that learning curve like everybody else. We think we're going to get an answer through those thoughts. That's the tricky thing. When you start to think, should I, could I, would I, what's this? We think that if we follow that enough, we're going to get an answer. That's our analytical thinking. What we don't realize is as we're following it, our moods kind of, you know, are...
Right, exactly.
It's like, oh man, how did I get down here? Huh? Well, you could. Yeah, because you say, oh man, I had this dream, but now I'm feeling miserable about the dream. I better give the dream up. But you don't realize that you're feeling miserable because of the kind of thinking you were doing about your dream. Now, here's your protection. You don't have to stop anything that you're doing. You just have to know. If I manifest this kind of thinking, it's taking me this way. If I could look at my dream from another way of thinking, it will give me another experience. And when I'm in analytical thinking, I am pulled farther away from my innate wisdom. I am more about me now than the intelligence that I'm a part of. So you just look, you just see, oh man, there I go. I'm really getting caught up here about it. But you want to get back to the feeling. The feeling, as you said, Michael, as Michael said, the feeling is where the wisdom lies. That feeling of the pipe dream, that kind of feeling. It's a difference in feeling when you have the pipe dream and then when you get analytical about it. There's different feeling. And that'll tell you whether you're using the power you have in a way that's helpful to you. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally.
It does?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, what made sense?
I mean, the feeling of what I want,
yes,
deep down on me, is to go for it. But then I got into, okay, that would be a problem for that class, or that would be a problem for making the schedule, working, go through the class and working, that kind of thing scares me. And say, okay, wait a minute, let's think about it. Maybe it's not a good idea.
Isn't that funny how we do it? Like, we're already caught up in it, huh? We're already caught up in it. It's scaring us. So then we say, let's think about it some more, you know. But yeah, that's it. That's the difference. That's the difference. The feeling you got when you saw it. And then, uh-oh.
I think a lot of it, for me, what I notice is, we think we know what it's going to be like to go for it. We think we know the path that we have to take. We don't like the look of the path that we think we're going to have to take, so we dismiss the dream. Mm. Well, the truth is we have no idea what the path to the dream is going to look like. Yeah. And so we can talk ourselves in or out of it 1,000 times, and it's completely irrelevant to the actual journey.
But the thing kind of scared me, like, I could do billions different things, from art to medical school. I can easily see myself as a designer. I could easily see myself as a photographer, and I'm good at it. Mm-hmm. That's why it so scares me. Okay, is that right things when you like different things to do? Which path I'm in it? Which path I should take? That's kind of scary for me.
So what I hear in that, which is not uncommon, you know, I hear a lot, is I would feel more comfortable if I could put a name to my creative expression and just then do what that name tells me I'm supposed to do, instead of being in the flow of my creative expression, which will manifest in different ways every hour, if not every day. So as soon as I go, I am a blank, I am a writer, I am a painter, I am a doctor, well, okay, well, I know what doctors do, and I know what writers do, and, oh, if I'm a writer, I need to put on these clothes, and if I'm a doctor, I need to dress like this, and if I'm an artist, I need to dress like this. And we fall in love with the thought of a profession as opposed to the reality of the daily expression of whatever that creative impulse that's coming through us is. And it just so happens that if we stay in that flow, often other people will at some point go, oh, hey, you're a doctor. Oh, hey, you're a writer. Oh, hey, you're an artist. And we'll go, oh, okay.
Oh, hey, you're all of the above.
Or, hey, you're all of the above. But our experience from the inside out is just an experience of following that creative flow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We got one there, and then we'll go to Ian after.
So what you're saying is if it feels right, you do it. Is that kind of... Let me take her for example, because it sounds like maybe there's outside pressures or internal pressures for her to go to medical school, but maybe it's not her true dream, her true desire. So that's why I'm asking, is it the feeling of feeling right, or is it something else?
It's really difficult, in my experience, to avoid turning a description into a prescription. It's just hard. It's hard for almost everyone I know, myself included. So it's really difficult to hear a description of the flow of thought and not try and turn that into a prescription for therefore I should blank. Therefore I should go with the feeling. Therefore if it feels right, I should do it. Therefore if it feels like an external pressure, I should avoid it. And as best I can, I'm really doing my best to not say any of that. Because I don't know, because her wisdom will guide her. What I know is the mechanism that's going on in her head that's causing it to feel like a problem, which is that it seems like a good idea to think about it, and that the more she thinks about it, the more that cork is getting pushed down, and the less in touch with that energy and intelligence of life she is. She'll figure out what to do about that. That's not our remit. But if she understands that that's what's happening, as opposed to thinking, for example, that, well, the problem is these people have put pressure on me, so I now need to deal with that. And then when I've dealt with that, the other problem is I've always been a bit wishy-washy, so I need to become the kind of person, I need to work on that. And we can work on ourselves in our life forever and never actually follow that unfolding. And when you understand that that's what's going on, is I'm feeling my thinking about this, then I can just let my thinking do its thing and I can carry on and do mine. However that will happen to manifest for her through her wisdom. Does that make sense?
So the internal wisdom is always within you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my experience. Yeah.
Eventually it manifests itself.
I mean, you know, this is one of my metaphors that I seem to have been driving into the ground in the past week with clients, but I'll use it here as well. It sometimes seems to me like, you know the thing with Moses and the burning bush, like the bush that was on fire but not consumed by the fire, which was the wisdom. And so Moses is talking to this incredible intelligence and gets these stone tablets and goes down and everyone goes, oh, okay, we'll try and follow the stone tablets. Well, that's what we do too. We do have moments where we're really in touch with the burning bush, where we're chatting away to it, or even where we're on fire with it and not being consumed by that fire. And then, as quickly as possible, we want to write it down, leave the bush, and try and follow the map. And actually, the fire never goes out. It's always there. And we can go back to it at any time. And in my experience, the only time people get themselves into trouble is when they try to follow yesterday's map or a 20-year-old map, even if it came from wisdom at the time, and they try and follow it today instead of checking in with present moment wisdom. I don't know if your experience is different, but that's...
No, my experience isn't different. That's beautifully said. I go back to that. There's no way you will get away from what you are. So you are mind. There's no way you're going to get away from that. How can you get away from that? You can just think you're separate. You could think you're the one person that somehow is not part of God, you know? You're the one person who doesn't have the intelligence beyond the ages available to you at any moment. The problem is the unknown. That's the problem. Because there is moments of expression of wisdom in dreams for our lives where, as you said, it's an unknown. And we can scare ourselves in that moment. And that's all I was trying to share, is that if you have thoughts and you're able to know what your feelings are, it's telling you the quality of your thinking. So if you're starting to scare yourself about a dream, you know that the quality of your thinking is taking your spirit down. And that's enough to help you help yourself find a way back to the wisdom that's always there for you. It's always there for you. It's like, I don't know. If you're a doctor, if you're a surgeon and you're doing surgery, you're going to get wisdom about that work. You're not going to get a thought about a new way to do bread pudding. It's not going to come to you. If you're doing bread pudding, you may get a creative idea about bread pudding. I don't know. I don't know if that's helpful. But I just want you to see that you're always, you can't get away from the fact that you are mind. And then the intelligence of everything. And it'll work through you, for you. But you could scare the bejeebies out of you, out of yourself, to not hear it. To not help yourself let it manifest. And so what we're pointing to you this morning is, how does that happen? Well, it happens from the way you use thought. So you're free to use thought in many, many ways about a dream. And once you know that that's all that's going on and the various feelings you're having about your dream, you can come back to what Michael says and regroup and take another look. It gives you the vantage point. You get a vantage point in life. So if there are potholes to avoid, if you're down at the bottom level, you're going to hit them all. You're not going to see them. But if you get a vantage point, you could say, oh, yeah, there's a pothole. I better not go there again. So that's how to go about it. Does that help?
Yeah, beautiful.
Thank you. Oh, we got Ian next.
You guys were talking about dreams and stuff, I have a close friend of mine. So I'm also doing music here in LA, and a very close friend of mine, my producer that I'm working with now, is a pretty wise person. And last night we were all out to dinner, and I have a friend who works for CBS, and my friend Emil, who's the producer, said he's a very creative guy. He's photographer, he's great with a camera, like video camera. He's an amazing painter, an amazing producer. He has a new website like coming out. I mean, he's got so many things he's doing. He's also doing real estate. And my friend who works for CBS said to him, you know, why do you do so many things? Like, how do you do all these different things? How do you have all these different things that you do? And he just said, I just don't really think a lot about it. And he said, well, and my friend kind of responded, well, don't you feel like you should have one thing that you excel at, one thing that you do? And he said, why? And I just thought it was so wise. I mean, he's a pretty wise person without really knowing how wise he is, which is a cool thing. But it led me to kind of think about a lot of what you guys are saying and what I was feeling when you were just speaking about, you know, your dreams and the things that you want to do. That to be in a state of mind of not judging too much where you're headed or where you're going or what you feel like doing in that moment really can lead you to be creative with where you're at in that moment. You know? So.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And it's like, I think you said it. I forgot where you said this, but you did it on an interview. And it just touched me, what Ian was talking about touched me. And it's like, I thought I was a big shit in the principles, you know, in like the 80s. You know, I thought, oh, man, I was cool. And so I got kind of a talking to about it because people were saying, you know, I was kind of not connecting with people. So so George Pransky took me out to lunch and he said, Hey, you are getting people off of cocaine. Yeah, that's pretty good. You're getting people off of cocaine, but they're God. And all you're doing is getting them off of cocaine. And that's kind of the sense of it. We are so much that we will only limit ourselves and scare ourselves through thought that will keep us thinking we're limited. And so that story is like when somebody can easily just be in that creative energy, it's nothing to then form something else because you're always forming. You're always forming. That's the nature of the principles. You can't get away from it. And if you live in creativity, you can't help but form another thing. So it looks natural to people who just live there. It looks natural. Oh, yeah, well, Michael writing all those books, it looks natural to him. To me, it looks like, oh, my God, how do you even sit down and start? You know, so I've had creative ideas for writing, but I get into, I create thinking. You see, you get it? That submerges the cork. But we are creating all the time. You just have to, if you could live with that, it'd be beautiful, wouldn't it? You're just creating. That's what you are. You're creative energy in a body thinking. And if you don't attend to a lot of thoughts that go against you, put up obstacles and roadblocks, you create another form.
You know, we talked about that a little last night, that's why we're here today. Right? Mark and I were having a conversation a couple months ago, and he said, hey, it'd be fun to have, you know, to do something together. Like, okay. And here we are. And that was it. You know, neither of us apparently had very much thinking about it. So I don't think, I seem to remember we had like one more chat, and I said, yeah, okay, I've got a venue. What should we call it? And then we came up with a name, and here we are. You know, the creative, that's natural. That's a natural expression of the flow of thought. We can get more or less in the way of it. We can try and define it. We can try and put boundaries around it. We can try and have it only unfold in this part of our life, but not here. You know, one of the things we find in the coach training is a lot of people really allow this creative potential to come through when they're with another person, and totally cut off from it when they're trying to sell coaching. Well, that's selling, right? I need a formula for that. But here I can just be present with another human being. Here I can just connect. Here I can just allow whatever comes through to come through. Well, why would it be any different in any area of your life? And yet we have thinking that it should be. And so you can pretty much track in anyone's life, in my experience, the areas where there's not a lot of creativity going on are the areas where there's a lot of thinking. And the areas where there's not much thinking, there's a lot of creative expression.
You just want to touch that today. You just want to see the potential. You don't want to analyze this, huh? You just want to see the potential. Mm-hmm. It's simple, too. You're just as creative in a love relationship. Mm-hmm. Same thing. There's a tremendous, tremendous creativity in a love relationship, just a simple love relationship, or in a friendship. So you just want to catch on to the fact that you will never stop every moment creating something. You're just not going to stop that. And as your thinking becomes, I don't know, less troublesome to you or troubling or disturbing, you catch on to creating, manifesting more of your dreams. But you can't get away from the fact that you're going to be creating. And it's all the time. And here's another way of looking at it. It in terms of being an art, rather than being an artist or a producer, just an everyday person, ordinary person in life, you could be creative anywhere. Anywhere. So Sidney Banks has a wonderful story about this. See, Sidney Banks was a mill worker. And he was belonged to this. There was like a four-man team with a foreman, and the foreman would always give Sidney Banks the worst job of the plant because he would get reactive. So he got his epiphany, and then he went back to work. And what he saw, when he got the worst assignment, what he saw was, I'll just do the best damn thing I can with this. I'll just be, his creative juices just came with that particular work task. And he did a wonderful creative way of working on these, what looked like drudgery tasks before. I consulted many years ago to a manufacturing company. And the head of the company was having trouble with his machine workers. And what was going on was the head of the company was really coming in being very judgmental. So I suggested to the owner, why don't I work with you first, coach you, and let's get the climate changed, and you'll see some things changing in your machine workers. He was open to that, and he was really open to changing. So he did. And he started to go around calming people's minds. He's, instead of working up his machine workers by standing over them, you know, with that judgmental stance, like, why aren't you going faster? He went about them asking about their families. He started to get the idea, creative idea, to bring gifts in for their birthdays, bring them something, give them a dinner somewhere. For their spouses' birthdays, for their kids' birthdays. All of a sudden, the climate shifted. Production increased. Now, here's the thing. He was making this presentation at an employee assistance program, talking about how the principals helped. His machine worker created, with no engineering education, a better way for that machine to operate. And once, so how I would explain it is, once human beings are not caught up in insecure thought, in fearful thinking, in watching over your shoulder thinking, in thinking that takes down their cork, they're creative. And they see things because the wisdom we're talking about is beyond you. It's beyond your education. That's how it could be done. The proof of it for me was Sidney Banks had less than an eighth grade education. When he presented, he was in the flow of that intelligence. And he would say words that he didn't even know. Three-syllable words. He never learned three-syllable words. And they would fit right. He would ask his wife, did I use the right word there? Okay, why am I telling you this? All I'm trying to point to is, what we're trying to point you toward is, you've got something going for you greater than you can imagine. And as Michael has said, I think you've said, I don't want to put the words there, but it sounded like it to me. The only thing getting in the way of that is you. How you can sometimes, and innocently, how you can sometimes get into thinking about yourself and getting judgmental about the creative idea.
Yeah, the expression I love, because to me it seems so accurate, is the innocent misuse of the gift of thought. Oh,
sorry.
It's all right. You know, we get bunged up by, we don't see that we're thinking ourselves into trouble. you know, and we're creating all these scenarios that we then think we have to deal with. And when you start to see that, you just get less caught up in it. It always made me laugh, the idea that you need to be positive to be successful. I am a dyed-in-the-wool pessimist. I think everything will fail. It's just never particularly seemed relevant to me that I think that. Because for whatever reason, I've always got that thought doesn't work that way. That thought doesn't determine whether or not something's going to succeed. Thought's just like noise in the machine. And it doesn't matter whether the noise in the machine is positive noise or negative noise. Right? It's nothing to do with the machine working. The machine will work if the machine is designed to work. And so, you know, it really, I remember, this is a slightly different context, but when I had a dream early on in my life to be an actor, and I was about to open in my first West End show in London, you know, the London equivalent of Broadway. And I knew the only thing that could stop me is if Nina got pregnant. And literally, the week of dress rehearsal, she comes to my dressing room and she says, "I'm pregnant." Now, in my head, and I'm going to say this, I got to tell you, this looked real to me. I thought, shit, I've got to give up and become a plumber. Like, that made sense to me. If you ever saw me try and do anything with my hands, it would not make sense to you. But the best I've worked out later is our next-door neighbor. I grew up in a really Catholic neighborhood, and our next-door neighbor had 14 kids, and he was a plumber. That's the only connection I can make. But at the time, I really thought, oh, God, I knew this day would come. Right? And it seemed like a big dilemma to me. You know, do I stay? You know, in this relationship that I love with this woman that I love, and give up my dream to become a plumber, or do I follow my dream? Right, my two choices. Right, that was my dilemma. And I always say the two things that got me through that the pregnancy. One is I have a really patient wife. Okay, I don't want to underplay that. But the other is, I kind of knew that I'm wrong a lot. Right, I kind of knew enough about thought to know that just because I think something a lot and it really seems real doesn't mean it is. It just means that's how thought works. And so I was able to just kind of stay with it, even though in my head, oh, it's not going to work, it's all over, this is a disaster. And you know, it was funny to me that it took less than 30 seconds after Oliver was born, after my son was born, to realize how wrong I'd been. You know, like I'd forgotten or maybe never knew about the love thing, right? So I knew about the nappies, I knew about the vomit, I knew about the money, I knew about the time. But I didn't understand about that deeper feeling that was available. And as soon as I felt that, it was like, oh, I wonder what all the fuss was about, right? Well, all the fuss was about the innocent misuse of the gift of thought. And that's one of the things that I find in the clients that I work with who you know, in the creative arenas and business, who go out and do create all sorts of really cool things, is it's not so much that they're more or less positive than anyone else. It's just they've learned either consciously or unconsciously intuitively to not pay so much attention to all the noise in their head and to just get on with the expression of that creative force, mm-hmm. of that deeper self.
Somebody here has a question.
Okay, for Evren?
Thank you so much. It's been a pretty amazing morning for me. How do you know what's wisdom and what's noise in your head when you're feeling something?
How do you know what?
What is wisdom, or when you feel or a thought comes to your mind? What is the difference between noise in your head rather than the wisdom? If you're about to do something, let's say, and you're feeling one way or another about it, how do you know you're feeling that way because of the noise in your head?
Let me try just a quick question. Do you know what you want for lunch?
No, okay. Not yet.
Okay. Do you know what it's like to know what you want for lunch? Like, do you know the difference between when you don't kind of know what you want and you know, oh, God, I really fancy this. I really fancy chicken. I really fancy fish. Have you had that experience of kind of just going, ooh, I'd love a good steak or whatever it is?
Yes.
Yeah. So to me, it really is no different than that. It's just when I know what I want because I know that I want it. And then if I'm caught up in thinking, well, do I really want this? Is this wisdom telling me to have steak? Or is this noise in my head telling me to have? It's noise in your head. Because you know when you know. You don't necessarily know how you know, but you just know. For me, I used to be such a book junkie. You know, I ran a couple of bookshops and I had so many books that one day it dawned on me, I'm going to have to come up with a better way of doing this, or I will never be able to walk around my room again, let alone get through the books. And it dawned on me, oh, well, there are books that I just know I have no interest in. Like, they just don't interest me. And there are books that I just, God, I see it and I want to pick it up and read it right away. And then there's a lot of books that I think I want to read. And I just learned that the books I think I want to read, I don't really want to read. And you begin to get a feel for it, in my experience. Because there are you already have that wisdom at work in you. There are already all sorts of things that are completely clear to you. And all the stuff that you think, is it this or is it that, that's just because it isn't clear to you. That is the noise. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Great. Can we go to the front?
So, I think I got kind of confused about the thinking thing. Because on the one hand, it seems like we're saying, like, thoughts are creative. And so then it seems like it's important to pick the ones that you want to go with, But then the other thing you were just saying is that it really doesn't matter if your thoughts are negative. Mm-hmm. So I was finding myself, I had this kind of insight a few moments ago that... you know, there was this point where I thought that I had cancer, and people were telling me I had cancer and all this. And then I literally decided at some point with some help that I just didn't want to go with that whole bullshit. And I didn't. And now it's like it's irrelevant to me. And this has been, it's already been 5 years, and it's like it just went away, like as a non-issue. And I was thinking, well, maybe I can do the same thing with the bankruptcy. Mm. Like, you know, what... But I guess I'm not completely, I can't see that as clearly. It seems like, you know, I'm more caught with that thought. But then I think, so if I ignore it, that doesn't seem to be working. Because it's in a way, it seems like it's just getting closer and closer to where it's going to happen anyway.
So that's can I jump in just for a minute?
Yeah.
There's a beautiful illustration of the difference that Mark and I were talking about earlier between what I would call following wisdom and following the idea. So 5 years ago, wisdom guided you to say fuck it to a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But now it's not wisdom saying say fuck it to the bankruptcy. It's you going, well, saying fuck it worked there. Maybe if I say fuck it here, that will work. Mm-hmm. That's no longer following wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's now following the stone tablets. That's now trying to follow a formula.
Well, I don't know what to follow. So I'm just saying in terms of that idea that you're talking about is that I'm getting mixed up between what you focus on expands. So I'm focusing on that I'm running out of money versus I could have that negative thought and it not mattering. Do you know what? I'm kind of confused about what you're actually saying. Like, which way?
And I don't know if you can hear, but the confusion is coming out of trying to turn it into a prescription.
Okay.
Because as best as I can, I'm really trying hard not to say what you should do. because I don't know what you should do.
Yeah.
I know that you are a part of a deeper intelligence, and that when that intelligence is flowing as designed, you will be guided to the best possible way mm-hmm. to deal with whatever situation you mm-hmm. find yourself in. That's what I know.
I guess where I go to with that is, if I was being guided, how did I get to this place in the first place? You know what I mean? Like, if I was being so guided, why am I here with this problem?
So can I share something? Yeah. Have you had a nice feeling through the morning?
Yeah.
Do you think that you felt like you something made sense to you this morning?
Yeah.
And I would recommend that you sit with that.
Okay.
See, I'm not sure if this is what's happening, but I know it's happened to me. I'll have something in my life that I'm not sure about. I'm struggling with. And then I hear something that comes to me. I hear something about the nature of thought or the principles, you know. And then I want to go look at what I felt, what I got a sense of, and deal with this. But I'm not ready. I just got kind of a glimmer. And I want to hurry up and take care of something. Mm-hmm. And what you want to do is let the glimmer move from what are those in the fireplace? Those
embers.
Embers. The embers are there now. You got, and you want to wait till it starts to catch.
Thank you.
See, you want to wait till it starts to catch.
Okay.
See, it's just. Our minds love to do this. And they just love to see if they could get something. But you already got something, and you want to let that grow in you. You do. Yeah. If you go after life right now, you're just not going to see it. If you go after an issue of life right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love that, Mark. I remember one of the first conversations, actually, I'm going to share two short ones, because I remember the first conversation I had with a client in a situation like that. And the metaphor that came up for me was a laser. That when a laser first locks on, you know, the light has to bounce off all the mirrors and build up the charge before it can fire. And you go, well, I've been looking at it. You know, why is it not firing? Where's my creative flow? Well, it hasn't built up to that level of clarity yet where it breaks through. And if you keep moving the laser around, it never will. You kind of have to just leave it there to do that. Now, I articulated this to him. It changed his life. I mean, he literally called me 2 days later and said, what the fuck did you do to me? And I said, I don't know, but it's cool, huh? Right? Now, I then, and this is hard to do, as you can imagine, like maybe easier with Mark than with me, I then almost got into a fight with my first principles teacher because he wouldn't help me solve my problem. Because I thought I got it. I'd been there for 2 days. Right? This was Keith. Yeah. Right? I'd been with Keith for 2 days. I got it. I actually loved what he was saying. And I wanted to apply it to my situation. He's like, you know, I just don't think we're quite at the point. And I'm like, well, look, I'm paying for, you know, I got into all this. And I did at least finally get to the point where I realized I was being an idiot. Like, and I'm not saying that about you, but I mean, no, I'm really not. No, I just suddenly realized that. But like, I really just got, okay, I'm pretty sure this isn't the feeling that we've been talking about for 2 days that I am in right now. And I kind of was able to back off it. And then later, it just came to me. And I think that's a very common thing, is especially when we're caught up in a life circumstance, which happens to all of us, we want to take care of that one now. I have one of my favorite metaphors in the book is the blind driver. I don't know if you've read the book yet. But it's, you know, if you imagine, you know, you're walking down a country road you know, the sun's come out after a rainstorm, and this car comes whipping around the corner and sprays you with mud. And it's covered in mud, and like you can't see through the windscreen. And the driver rolls down the window, and he's covered in mud. And he goes, "Yeah, I gotta get to town. It's really important. I gotta get to town. I need directions to town." And you're like, every person I know would go, "Hang on, let's clear your windscreen first."
Yeah.
There's no point in my giving you directions to town right now. And the difference with the mind is the windscreen is self-cleaning. It's like the cat litter tray, right? You just need to leave it for a bit and it will clear. And then you can find your own way to town. Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, Deb.
I just keep hearing this over and over, and it's so like my life. This is one of the first big insights I had when I learned these principles is, and I still do it today, but it's this insight about how I've used my thinking to scare myself to death. Mm. And then I realized it's never really stopped me from doing what I was dreaming in my head. Mm. But at times it made me, let's just say, extremely ungracious while going through it because I was so scared. Mm. And So I keep learning I play this little game with myself. Now I hear all this stuff and then I start giggling because it's like, oh yeah, the elephant's really gonna come and walk and squish me flat, you know, like, you know, all these fears and you know, like a big dragon with his tail swishing, and now I'm swished flat and I can't do anything. It's just all make-believe stuff that I, you know, whip out in my head. And I have to laugh at how creative I am with you know, thinking up fears. And business people don't think they're creative. We are wildly creative. Are you kidding? but it's just not real, and I just keep remembering that. Mm. Oh, yeah, okay, you know. I'm still here. It's not real. It's.
It's amazing though because it seems so real.
It does when you're in it. It's like, yeah. You know,
yeah.
Walking down that long hallway, blindfolded, feeling your way. You know, and or however your metaphor is, whatever yeah. you, but it's just not real. And I swear that fear and insecurity is the always my stopping block, or at least stumbling block, because it never really stops me, but I stumble. But I'm learning to just keep going.
So. I've always been fascinated by the irrelevance of fear. As I've gotten to see this more, that's the thing that's always struck me, is I used to think that fear was a block, like, oh, okay, I can't go on till I'm not scared. And then I did like the empowerment stuff where, no, fear is a message telling me to go forward, and if I can't, I must, right? And all of that. And as I started to see that the only place fear can ever come from is thought, then it just became like, I think I used the analogy on the radio show this week, those of you who heard it, it's like, you know, if I walk past people in red shirts, does that mean I should stop or I should go? I'm going to walk past people in red shirts. I'm going to have scary thoughts.
Well, and now yeah. I think it's so cool that I have this power to create my own horror movie. Yeah. And then I just see it for my own horror movie, and it's like, okay, done with that. Yeah. Let's make a happy movie now.
Yeah. Thank you, Deb.
So I just wanted to say, I didn't really like how I responded to you. So I've been kind of reflecting on that. And so I don't know if I'm going to respond to you any better, but I just didn't like leaving it there. So, look, we get bumps in life. Sydney Banks says life is a contact sport. That you know the principles doesn't mean you're not going to have difficulty. But this understanding helps you know what you can do to try to keep your bearings. And if you're trying to grow a new plant, one of the things you want to do is take the weeds out. And the weeds are self-evaluation, fear, insecurity, thinking you did something wrong. See, those are all... So thinking is what you want to help yourself get out of the way so the plant can grow, the wisdom can help. And many times I've seen so many people in my life that because of what they're caught up in, having a lot of bumps. And one of the things that is easy for them to do is to get into thinking badly about themselves. Use thought that way. And that is the one thing that will kill self-esteem. And you need self-esteem in order to find your way out. You need well-being in order to find your way out. You need inner buoyancy to find your way out. So what we're pointing to is a way to help you weed, help you take a look at, oh man, I can't go there. I know it looks tempting to look at myself critically right now, but I just have to cultivate wisdom. I have to cultivate that I heard something. And so to make that grow and blossom, and I know once it does, I'm going to know. I'm going to see my way clear, because every human being has an answer. So I just wanted to share that with you, huh? What you avoid is self-evaluation. You just have a bump. It's a contact sport. And you, though, also have the wherewithal to know what to do. That's the other piece. So I just wanted to share that with you. Actually, I feel better about that response than me.
And really, we're here today to help Mark Howard feel better.
Thank you.
It feels like lunch to me.
Yeah.
All right, let's take an hour and a half.
Wow, what a morning. I don't know. I don't think we can put anything more in.
Yeah, no. So we'll come back at 2:30.
Yeah.
Which is technically a little more than an hour and a half, but yeah, we'll be back.